Welcome to another sizzling episode of Fired Up, your source for all things conservative. Who says we conservatives aren't diverse? Tonight we feature a woman, an Indian, a Latino, and yes, the prerequisite required white guy. You can't win them all, but we try. Also tonight, it seems the progressive media and their Democratic pals are dusting off their old playbook of inflammatory rhetoric, because nothing says responsible journalism like rehashing the same rhetoric of hate that led to two attempts on a former president's life. But hey, when the polls are looking grim, why not throw caution to the wind? And speaking of stellar journalism, let's give a round of applause to CNN and Kamala Harris for their masterclass in authentic town halls. Nothing says open discussion quite like planting questioners and sticking to a script, right? It's almost as if they think voters can't handle unscripted moments. How considerate of them to protect us from the perils of spontaneity, honesty, and the fact, despite being raised in a middle-class family by a mother, she can't handle the truth. Some family. But wait, there's more. The Atlantic has truly outdone itself this time. Their editor, Jeffrey Goldberg, when confronted with pesky things like eyewitness accounts and direct refutations from the very family they claimed to be speaking for, what did they do? Double down on their story, of course, because who needs facts when you have a narrative to push? It's almost impressive how they managed to keep a straight face through it all. But then again, practice makes perfect, doesn't it? This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up, a special Sunday night episode. There's so much information out there, we just have to do two of these a week for now. And let's welcome our regular Ms. Annette Ross and our guest once again, Mr. Jamie Miller. Before Jamie talks about himself, let me remind you people, you need to sit there, like this, share it. Watch it all the way through, and more importantly, subscribe. You can find this podcast and others like it on grumbliesmedia.com, as well as our social media platforms such as YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora. Thank you for tuning in. Mr. Jamie Miller, it's great to have you back, and the beautiful Miss Annette Ross, it's always good to have you on. Jamie. Tell us a little bit about yourself before we get going so the audience knows who the predetermined prerequisite, the average white guy is.
So for Fired Up, should I be Jamie Miller?
There you go. I like that.
Hey, thanks for having me back. I really appreciate it. I'm Jamie Miller. You can find me at Rep Jam. There's the book, American Speeches That Changed History. Voices That Shaped the Nation. I'm pretty proud of it. I always say, instead of taking a bottle of wine to your holiday party, buy a book and take that. Take the book. That way they can re-gift it. They can keep giving it. But, you know, maybe inscribe in there so they have to buy their own. And then I write a blog on Substack at Reasonable Arguments and all my other social media, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitter, all of those, Facebook are all at Rep Jam.
Outstanding, outstanding. Well, I sat there and said in the opener we have an Indian with us, but G seems to have scampered away tonight, you know?
He did show up, you know.
Yes, he can. Mm-hmm. He's always welcome. But Jamie, I always poke fun. Being raised in a Latino household, being the whitest dude there, having my head grabbed, prodded back, you know, being asked, my mother.
Well, so you had sisters too.
Oh, yeah, three sisters. I was the only boy.
Yeah, I had two sisters. So, yeah, I know the feeling.
One day I'm going to put up my family picture, Because everybody looks at that and they go, when I sat there and said, what would you think? I sat there and said there was a group of people that came together for a picture. I go, no, that's my family. We all look so different. Yeah. So I always have, I grew up poking fun once I moved to the States and saw how tribalistic we become. That's my way of dealing with it, I guess, you know. But tonight we got a great show, everybody. We are going to talk about our good old friend, media bias. We're going to talk about the hateful rhetoric that has reared its head once again because the Kamala camp is desperate. And is social, we're going to start off with, is social media censoring again? There's a very popular site called Outkick.com. Woo! Sneeze so hard you knocked your camera. That's a power. So we're going to talk about, there was an article here, Miss Annette, on Outkick.com, which is an entrepreneurial site that was sold to Fox Sports. Clay Travis, living the American dream, sold it for, I don't know, near $100 million. So congrats to him. But they do sports and politics, and they had an interview with one of their staffers. Everybody knows who Tyrus is on Fox News. He interviewed President Trump. Well, a reader called or emailed them and said, hey, I tried to share this. And Facebook said it violated the community standards. So Outkick inquired about it. Meta, it's not Facebook now, but Meta said that, hey, this is an error. We fixed it, you know, and we're having issues with our third-party links. The problem is that when Outkick went and tested it, they didn't use a third-party link. And for those out there, we use third-party links for two reasons. Some of our URLs are really long because we track them, and or you third-party links help us track. It's data gathering, so we know how the platforms are doing and sharing our work, et cetera, et cetera. So Facebook kind of lied when they came back and said, you know, it's a third-party link error. And they're like, no, we used a straight link. So my question to the group and for discussion here, is this censorship or accident? I will start out by saying I think it's probably a combination of both. I think Zuckerberg was covering his tail when he spoke to Congress and that. Remember, we did that podcast in terms of how the Biden administration pressured them. I think they're okay with censorship, but I think they've removed most of it. But I wouldn't put it past them. So I would lean to this being more of an accident, maybe an old algorithm blocking it that they haven't cleaned out, because Facebook is a massive site. If you're not a tech, managing a site like Facebook is not like a, hey, we got our tech on it. No, they have teams and teams of techs in various countries managing this platform. So we'll start with Jamie, actually, and then we'll go to Ms. Annette there in terms of what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I disagree with you just because Facebook, I think, breaks antitrust laws each and every day. For instance, I cannot post my Substack on Facebook for some
reason. Wow.
I know that. Substack goes against their community standards because you're trying to, they know what you're trying to do. You're trying to take your users and move them to a different platform. And they're against it. And they're I think they're in violation of antitrust laws by doing so. I can't tell, and even my political things that I write on Facebook, the number of posts that I put on that are political that my own wife doesn't see is, and you know, it's, they certainly clamp down, you know, I have like 4,000 or 5,000 friends or whatever. And then you have 400 or 500 followers and you have 3 people comment on, you know, a dozen things that you do in a week. And there's just no question that if they don't like what you're speaking about, they censor it, which is why I moved to Substack in the first place, is because, you know, the censorship is not there. It's they pretty much allow free speech. Twitter has gotten a lot better with free speech since Elon Musk has taken it over, but there's still a good bit of, I like to say there's a good bit of radicalism over there on the Democrat side. Just they do it through their community notes process, where if you put something out there, you have some Democrat who doesn't like what you say and they're, oh, you're wrong. They put in a community note. And if the community note gets liked by enough people, then it slows down the algorithm for other people seeing it. So, Democrats are certainly, it seems like, much farther ahead on this game than Republicans. But, you know, hopefully we're catching up through platforms like this. I think this is the way to really kind of break through, is to take your message directly to people on your own platforms.
No, I agree. I was trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, because I have seen some of my stuff allowed to go through that.
Because you don't want their AI listening to you and clamping down on all your stuff. Is that why you're giving them the benefit of the doubt?
No, I'm waiting for my application to come back. You know, no, you're right. I mean, that quickly turned me. I was trying to give them the benefit of the doubt, partly for discussion. But like I said, some of my stuff has been able to be posted, but. That's my greatest fear, is hearing that. You put a gun to my head. I'm sure any Democrats would be okay with that Second Right Amendment there, you know, but I'd have to agree with what Jamie said there, despite my earlier comments. What are your thoughts?
I always give something the benefit of the doubt. I can't help it. I guess that's like the positive person in me, or it's too troubling to think of, what it means to be censored like that, but it's purely anecdotal to say what to Jamie's point, that when I look at my own Facebook, I tend to get the message, and I have a lot of people that I'm following, a lot of people that are following me. I tend to get the message from the Democrat side more than my friends I know, that's, again, who are very, very pro-Trump and the things that they're out there saying. For some reason, that doesn't come through as much, and they will text me and say, did you see what I just posted? I posted this. I'm like, how is it that I didn't get that? You know, but you think to yourself, oh, there's probably some way that, again, that's anecdotal, right? How do I actually know that that is actual censorship? But it just, right? That's not proof.
Studies have been done that show that. And
I thought it was being sorted with Facebook, because they sort of got that, they sort of got slapped in the hand. Like,
well, that's just it. They didn't. I mean, see, that's the problem, is X, when Jack Dorsey owned it, Zuckerberg, no fines were given, no charges, you know, nothing. It doesn't matter if you admit it. That's like a politician going, I take full responsibility. As they cash their next check, they get their next lobbying gig, they get their next $50,000 to speak, but I take responsibility. They always say that because nothing happens. I mean, that's what Zuckerberg was doing at Congress. You know, this or that. But then and Jamie's one of a million stories. Again, I was trying to give him the benefit of the doubt, because I think they have opened it up a bit. I think they will open it up more and more in the coming years, because Facebook is slowly dying. They're not speaking up. Younger people have moved. I think the problem with social media platforms, and that's going to happen, is a handful will end up becoming big. But the days of these behemoths, like Facebook coming up, because they were the first and only ones there, are gone. You're going to see a constant generational change with social media platforms because of youth. There's something about youth that I never realized. They don't want mama and papa on the same platform. You know,
they do not. That's the same thing.
And what happens is youth hang out. And we're not dumb. We know how to get on these platforms and do media platforms. So I think Facebook is slowly dying. They're not growing. I see it with our own postings and things like that, because I track these numbers. So I think eventually it's when you get desperate, you know, let the dogs of war out. You know, it's like, let the conservatives on, you know, eventually. I mean, Threads, it was a big old explosion, 100 million the first week. Then it just slowly kept dying. Because that's the other thing. I think one reason X is so vibrant is because you have both sides on there fighting. And I say fighting, we need better debate. But that's actually good for business. When you have just one side, eventually you're just going to have the same, like my Threads. And my point is, Threads is not growing. It's slowly dying before it got started. It's not relevant. It's kind of like I was telling G off camera a few days ago. There's a lot of people out there with a couple million followers. They earn good money, etc. But then they're not relevant in the pop culture sense. Joe Rogan is relevant with his 10, 11 million. Because everybody knows who he is. Everybody follows him. But there's other podcasters out there with 5, 6 million, but they're not as relevant. But they're doing it. They're making a killing. But so I think Facebook or Threads has no relevance. X is gaining all the relevance, all the notoriety. And I think that's good for business. It's good for conservatives. And Facebook should learn from that. Okay, let's move on here. Any final comments?
Well, then, no, but my point then, to your point, would be then, for the sake of competition, then, maybe they'll be less likely to be censoring.
So, you know, you're right, but I think they dominated the market for so long, and they still do. Let's not make, I mean, they have 2 billion followers in the world. So, but I'm talking about the relevance in the States is dropping. I don't know their relevance worldwide, and they're probably, it's kind of like this. When I was last in Panama some years back, BlackBerry was dead here in the States. It was still the number one phone because iPhones were way too expensive in the third world country. So BlackBerry was still – you got to remember, in third world countries, the big things are tied to those cards you buy minutes on. You know, it's so much different from here. But anyway, you're right. Eventually, they may do that to try to compete again. But I think the die has been cast. They're dying a slow death, and that's why they're diversifying – and they're smart. They're diversifying to other sectors. All right. So some examples of fake news here. The CNN town hall featuring Ms. Kamala Harris, October 23rd, 2024. And for the record, Anderson Cooper is getting a lot of pushback from the left. How dare you actually ask a real question to our candidate? How dare you, Anderson Cooper? Yeah, Charlemagne the God, you know, a black activist will say, how dare you ask her questions, you know, that make us all look bad, you know? And so he's taking a lot of heat. But what got me, so, I mean, and I expected that. You can't criticize any Democrat. But what got me and what I try to tell people is very common is plant. In this case, they had a woman who identified herself as Cassidy Cat. She was presented. This isn't the first time she's been presented as an undecided voter during the town hall. In reality, she is Dr. Cassidy Cat, a professor of sociology at Widener, I think that's how you pronounce it, Widener University, with a history of liberal activism and anti-Trump social media posts. Katz asked Harris a question about immigration policy, and CNN didn't disclose it. Hey, let's go to our plant in the audience. I mean, you know, to be realistic, nobody would have disclosed it. But what are your thoughts on having an alleged plant? And is it really necessary? I mean, if you're going to – in today's tribalistic world, Annette, you're going to have mostly everybody's – well, maybe they would have people from others. But, I mean, do you see it as being necessary? And what are your thoughts when you find out, well, it's a plant?
I didn't see that town hall. Now I wish I had seen it. I'm sorry that I didn't because I spent today watching a bunch of different, like, her interview by NBC. No, and that – I told you the fascinating, like, Nora O'Donnell interview – on CBS this morning. But it was the same type of thing, though, William. It was the exact same thing, where it was the softball questions. The way they angled the questions to her were to make – because they desired a certain answer and a certain outcome, so she could give this, like, emotional play about – this happened to be the entire CBS interview was about abortion. That was the only topic. It was like there was no other topic that even mattered. It didn't matter if the country was – the whole world was blowing up. This is what – she wanted to talk about. It's sort of the same idea. You know, it's a way of giving her the edge. It's a way of misinformation. It's a way of, but here's the problem. This is the problem. And I have this viewpoint because I have kids that are younger and they're looking at it differently. So I have my daughter, I always talk about her in New York, who buys into the whole Kamala thing. And she'll see a plant like that and maybe not go any further. I mean, she will believe it. That's the problem. Not everybody. No, some people do. No, my daughter.
No. It's not that. It's Big Johnson. Lay off Annette's daughter, William. You know, you're going to draw a wedge between them.
She represents a college-educated young lady who went to Syracuse, graduated with honors, is out there living in New York. The only time you ever heard her be mad at the Democrats is when my husband's like, that's why you pay so many taxes in your check. And then she's like, wow, maybe I do need to think about who I vote for. But all of a sudden now, because this abortion issue speaks to her in some way, she and her group of friends, all this big group in New York, they're all like out there canvassing in Pennsylvania. No, it's actually very fascinating. But part of the thing is they went there scripted. And so she was reading me the script. So she was believing everything written on this piece of paper that they gave her. I'm like, why are you believing this? Same idea. That someone is on TV asking a question about immigration, however they crafted the question to get a certain answer from it, it's all staged. It's all sort of orchestrated for a certain outcome. I mean, I see right through it, but I don't know if everybody does. Certainly there are some people who definitely do not. That's
no, you're right. Real quick, what's your degree in?
My daughter's degree.
No, your daughter's degree. Yours is theology.
Mine's theology, right. She went to the Newhouse School. That's very hard to get into in Syracuse. It's one of the better broadcasting journalist schools in the country. And
well, there's your problem. Journalism. Journalism is not hard. When I started my first startup, I was the journalist because I went to all these events, so we were media. I interview people. There's tricks to journalism. Well, not tricks, but there's, you know, they can teach you how to be a reporter, this or that. But the most important facet is to be unbiased and honest. And they don't teach that.
And innately curious.
Innately curious for the truth.
Well, I used to love Charlie Rose's interviews. I think that was a nice dialogue.
I'm sure Charlie Rose loved you too.
Yes, I know. I met him. He did love me, actually.
Charlie Rose loved women. We found out.
Okay. He was actually a really nice man. Very bright. But anyway, that's digressing. But I will say, I had the opportunity to get. I was interviewed by him.
Right.
Okay, he's a lovely guy. But the point really is that sometimes not everyone is going to delve into it and be like, is that really true? I need to know. And they're listening and they're believing it. If I didn't know any better, I was listening to the Norah O'Donnell interview with Kamala, my heart strings would have been tugged. I would have been emotionally involved in that conversation. But I was like, wow, this is pathetic.
Well, that's tribalism. Tribalism is, I explain tribalism by even when your side is wrong, you will find a way to blame it on the other side and defend your side. Jamie, real quick too, my problem with college is they no longer teach. They indoctrinate and I'm not picking on your daughter, but she's not critically thinking. They're playing on her emotion. And we have to rise above that as humans, because that's what creates a lot of hate in this world is emotion, because it can be manipulated, because it causes you not to think straight. Mr. Jamie, were you ever hit on by Charlie Rose? No.
Never. I've never met Charlie Rose, so I'm sure he would have loved me as well.
What are your thoughts on having a plan in the – as an operative, tell us, is that common as an operative?
Yeah, here's the thing. I wouldn't put my candidate in the last 2 weeks in a situation where there wasn't certainty, right? And so whether you want to call that a plan, but I would have very scripted, the problem for Harris is that, and you've heard me talk about on your show before, that there's three levels or three stages of Kamala Harris, excitement, relief and regret. And people are quickly moving from relief to regret. And, she even ended her interview or her debate with Donald Trump saying, the relief stage, the relief for her supporters was that I'm not Joe Biden and I'm not Donald Trump. And everyone's like, I'm relieved. She took the air out of the balloon by just letting her people be relieved that she wasn't Joe Biden and not Donald Trump. And you remember probably more than a week ago now that, Donald Trump was in a McDonald's drive-thru window and everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is scripted. Everybody who came in, and there's a difference between ensuring that the people who are going to go to that drive-thru window are supporters and letting your candidate have a true and honest dialogue with them.
Right.
Versus, for sure, if somebody sent somebody to that drive-through window who cussed Donald Trump out and called him a Nazi or whatever, that campaign worker would have been fired, right? Because, I'm not going to I'm not going to put that person in front of my candidate. And so, now when you're trying to fill a room full of what's supposed to be undecided voters in a town hall situation. Of course, the campaigns are trying to get their people in. They're trying to get as many of their people to get through that process as possible. So there's a higher likelihood of the softball question being asked by, from a supporter. And so I don't know this particular supporter of Harris, but campaigns are, both guilty of that, I'm sure. The problem for conservatives is that the mainstream media will put those conservatives who come through the campaign through much more rigorous qualifying questions, right? And so Donald Trump's team would have a much harder time getting their people into that audience as, quote, undecided voters than Harris. They just look the other way and, okay, you want three or four, however many people in. And but also part of it has to do with relationships, right? And so, you know, and that, and this comes into the ingrained portion of what, you know, of what is the swamp in D.C. and quite frankly in media in New York, right?
That's, I mean, true. That's correct.
It's become a generational right to, you know, even the Ducey kid, you know, on Fox News, you know, and I don't blame a father for giving his kid a step up. But if that kid's last name wasn't Ducey, he'd be in Pensacola, Florida, you know, in an anchor chair, not in the White House press room asking questions of the White House press secretary. And so, you know, it happens on both sides, and it's frustrating for those of us who are, you know, outside the rings of power. And that's one reason why I think people like Donald Trump is, even though he's a product of that. His dad was a developer. He became a developer, and he's, you know, and his kids are developers, right? There's nothing wrong with the family business, so to speak, thriving, you know, but if you look at the family business being government or politics, that I think becomes an issue. And there've been Republican dynasties, so to speak, like the Bush family, and Democrat dynasties like the Roosevelts and Kennedys, and I'm sure the Clintons would love to have their daughter go into politics, and Obama would love to have their daughters go into politics, and we'll see if they do. You know, they may or they may not, who knows, but you know, certainly Joe Biden was trying to set a legacy with certainly his one son who died, and
he couldn't even get that right. I mean, the past year, it's like, oh my God, you know, Bo. And it's not like Bo was my problem with that. See, you hit a nerve with me, because I agree with you. It's even worse than the military. Those kids are ticket punched up, you know, and Bo was being ticket punched up. So who knows how good of a person Bo really was. He was.
It happens in Hollywood. It happens in every industry where there's, you know, where there's lots of money. You can, you know, so it's politics.
You made a great point about him, her, it being scripted. So I watched, did you guys watch the Joe Rogan interview with Donald Trump, the 3 hours?
I haven't yet.
Okay, you guys need to though, but let me just speak to one thing that Jamie said. He was obviously unscripted, which you know
Oh,
what?
Yeah.
But I love the authenticity. Kamala could never pull that authenticity off, and it made me know all the reasons, remind me of all the reasons that I like Trump, and also all the reasons that I don't, which is what made the interview for me wonderful, like a bit of an adventure to see parts of him, remember the parts of him that I really like and why I think he's good with his policy and some of his ideas are really fantastic, and he's different than other politicians, and the things about him that they went off into this tangent about boxing and is it called the UFC, the WFC, the Dana White? I'm sorry. I don't even know.
UFC.
Thank you. UFC. I was like, wow, these two guys, you know, just being like gladiators. Yeah. I mean, they dove right into all of that. And I was fascinated that they even like any of that. It just the way Trump was talking in that part. You guys need to watch it. We need to talk about it. It's actually very interesting.
We will.
But I love the authenticity of it, which you're not getting with Kamala in any of these venues, not any.
Okay, so we're going to move on. You're right. I want to move on, but real quick on your point. Back in the day, and Jamie's more familiar with this than I am, I assume, because he's been operative, they used to become battle-tested through the primary. And Trump is battle-tested because he's gone on all these shows who don't like him. See, Kamala's never been battle-tested. When she got battle-tested on Fox News, it was a massacre. And that's what you're talking about Trump, because he's been through the rigors, going to every network, everywhere they ask him to talk. So he's been battle-tested in that sense. And I apologize to you guys. I was looking at this fake news. I'm like, that's not on the docket. Yeah. my notes were like scrolled all the way down, you know. So the next topic is the media bias, helping Kamala directly. The media is still actively promoting, and that's a tangent of what I was just talking about, where Trump's battle-tested, he's gone to all these different networks that don't like him. Kamala doesn't. And here's the proof. This was based off a study that I researched. Kamala Harris's coverage is 84% positive media coverage. To her benefit, you know, the media's tough on her. They were 90% positive coverage for Obama. She's only 84%. Donald Trump's coverage is 89% negative. And they eased up on him. It was 95% negative during the Obama years when we ran in 2015. I'm being sarcastic, people. Tim Walz, even in the VP, Tim Walz, 62% positive media coverage, despite all the lies he's been busted. And they even lie with the cover-ups, you know, saying, oh, this report says this, and the report itself is a lie. And J.D. Vance has had 92% negative coverage by the media. Heck, they like J.D. Vance less than they like Trump. You know, Harris faces fewer tough questions and allows her to present her policies. Now, I want to hear your thoughts, but in the previous discussions, in terms of how she can't handle things, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think, Jamie, that this is why she's just failing right now? The media has no choice now but to start asking her some tougher questions. I mean, I guess they ran out of time to keep hiding for her, and now she's struggling. That all this positive media has left her unprepared for the CNN town hall, for the Fox interview. What are your thoughts, and just in general, on this type of coverage?
Well, first of all, J.D. Vance and Ron DeSantis provide a long-term threat to liberalism. And that's why they're going after both of them so very hard, is because they're both young men who have a long career in politics, and they want to hamstring them for as long as they can and about as many topics as they can, so that those things are albatrosses around their necks for the rest of their political careers. There's no question Democrats made a fatal flaw when they nominated someone without voting for them. You know, in my wildest dream, I didn't think that they would, even after Biden, and I predicted in my blog in October of 2023 that the week after the RNC convention, that Democrats would throw Biden overboard, because then Trump.
What? You predicted that?
October of 2023. And so, in that blog, I was wrong about one thing. I wrote that they would go to the convention and that Chuck Schumer would be the nominee, because I felt like there, by the time you look at the Senate and the House, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi were allies for so very long. There's no two better people who would ally during a brokered convention than Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. The two of them certainly would have decided who the nominee was. And I've predicted that they would pull kind of the Dick Cheney. I'm going to lead the vice presidential search. Gosh, I see the vice president in the mirror every single morning. Like, there I am. There's the vice president. I woke up and I saw him again. You know, so I think that there's those kind of things that happen. So she wasn't tested. She wasn't tested as vice president. She wasn't tested in California. And she had a very close race in either her district attorney or attorney general race. I mean, it was a pretty close race for a statewide Democrat race. And, you know, and she wasn't even tested there. So she's not battle tested. And her team, just like Biden's team in 2020, you have to remember, Joe Biden campaigned less than any presidential candidate in history since James Garfield's 1880 campaign, which was dubbed the front porch campaign. He never left the front porch of his house in Ohio. And he's like, well, if people want to hear what I have to say about being president, they can come visit me on my farm. So Joe Biden campaigned almost as little as that. When Kamala Harris' team when Kamala basically became the nominee, part of the deal with Biden was, you're going to take my team. And the team doesn't know how to run a presidential campaign without doing exactly what they're doing, which is hide out in the basement and throw barbs at their opponent and hope that people hate your opponent enough through division that you end up winning the race. And so I don't think they know that. That's why they went so crazy about the McDonald's thing. You know, like, well, this is just a staged event. This is crazy, because here you are, you have, Donald Trump standing at the drive-through window, hey, listen, I'll buy your French fries, you know, whatever he was doing and whatever he was talking about. But it was natural and it was banter that people have not seen from somebody like Kamala Harris. I mean, this joke of a thing where she and Governor Whitmer are at the bar drinking a beer like they don't know that they're mic'd up. And microphones and that around. When you have those scripted moments that are so cringeworthy and so off base that there's no question that the mainstream media can't call it like they see it at some level, because all of America saw Dukakis look like an idiot when he was trying to drive a tank. And, you know, at some point you're like, listen, that guy doesn't know anything about driving a tank. Like, what the heck is he doing? You know? And so, and it's the same thing with her sitting at a bar drinking a beer. You know,
there's nobody in America
who looked at that and said, that's the first beer that she's had since college. Like, I promise you, you know, she's drinking martinis, everything. Like, she's not drinking beer. And so why is she trying to do that? Like, why not just show America a glimpse of yourself? And the truth of the matter is, they are afraid and she is afraid that America is going to see exactly who she is and they are going to reject her. And which is what is happening each and every day as more and more voters reject the liberalism of Kamala Harris.
No, I agree. And for the audience here, as you can see there, Harris, 84% positive media coverage, Trump, 89% negative. Wild 62-92. And real quick on that, before you go to the, that's the McDonald's pick. And they got so mad at Trump in terms of, how he said, you know, there's no record. And McDonald's supposedly came out and said, we have no record of her working. So some progressive ex-posts started to come out, and one had the audacity to show this picture of her, go case closed, conservative, bleep, 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 bleep. And then somebody else says, really? This is the real picture. I mean, that's cultural appropriation. Taking the body of a white person, putting Kamala's head on it. You know? That's what I joke to my friends, because they're always talking cultural appropriation. I'm like, there's no greater cultural appropriation than that. But they're trying to pass that off as a picture of Kamala when she worked at McDonald's, and there's a real person. And the reason I brought this up is because Jamie mentioned it, but at the end of the day, if somebody had done that with Trump flipping around, that would be leading the news on every telecast, you know. And this is how the media helps her. They minimize these type of issues. And your thoughts on this? Honestly, Annette, going back to your daughter, this is a great stat to show her. Look, honey. Little, whatever you call your daughter, your the term of endearment that you use.
I call her Anna.
Anna, okay, Anna. Okay, Anna. Harris receives 84% of coverage. Don't you think that's a little wrong? She should be challenged for, so you know who you're really voting for. And don't you think it's odd that Trump is receiving 89% negative coverage? Well, it's all truth, Mom. Really? Maybe. Ask a few questions here. That's all I ever ask of people, but the emotional hate has people so ginned up, they don't want to see the truth. And Jamie, to your point on Tim Walz and J.D. Vance, you are absolutely correct. They are the future. So they want to destroy them as much now. So it becomes, you know.
You meant DeSantis. You said Tim Walz.
I'm sorry. J.D. Vance. You know. Yes. Nearly the same. Walz is only a few years older than me. Look at this difference. It's like, oh my God. So your thoughts, Miss Annette?
My thoughts are, I used to work at Burger King, and that's actually real. And had to wear the hairnet and everything else way back in the day. You said it when the show began, William, that it feels really desperate right now, and it does feel really desperate. She almost, in one of the interviews I watched of her today, seems almost tired and almost hostile. Like, don't you dare ask me another freaking question.
Yes.
I mean, doesn't it feel that way right now?
Yes,
when they do
does.
Try to, again, if they press her even just a little tiny bit, like, wait a minute, give us some of your, yes, we know that you're pro-choice, but are you going to have any restrictions at all? She's just like, stop. We're not going to go there. We're just going to go back to the way it was, and I'm going to sign it the first day I'm in office, and then Nora O'Donnell said, but no, I'm just trying to understand, will you have any restrictions around it? What are your thoughts about that? Should there be some restrictions? She's like, well, no, she just was like angry.
The problem is there's no federal law. There was never, ever a federal law providing abortion as even access to abortion legally. It was only a U.S. Supreme Court case that overturned a law, the Roe case, overturned a law in Dallas, in Dallas County, Texas. And so that somehow became the law of the land, and people embraced that. And I'm not talking about the merits of abortion. This is more of a legal scholar problem for Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she doesn't have a leg to stand on to say, I'm going to pass an executive order and provide national legal abortion, because a president cannot do that. It doesn't fall under the purview of an administrative order. And so, because there's no law that has ever been passed. And, you know, Democrats had 40 years where they could have passed a law reinforcing the Roe decision, and they never did it. They didn't do it.
So contentious. I mean, that's why nobody touched Roe versus Wade. It's such a contentious.
Well, nobody wanted, and that's exactly why, because they're like, oh, the U.S. Supreme Court took it. And we all know that just like everything else, if the U.S. House and U.S. Senate provide it, the U.S. House and U.S. Senate can take it away. If an administrative order from the president can provide it, an administrative order from a president can take it away. Mm-hmm. And if the U.S. Supreme Court provides it, yes, the U.S. Supreme Court can take it away. And so, you know, and all these folks who said, oh, this is established law. I was like, well, so was slavery. So was separate but equal. So was kids in classes being segregated. Oh, we're going to desegregate our schools, but we're going to have segregated classrooms, which happened throughout the South into the 70s.
Yeah.
And all of these things were, quote, established law. And I think we all would agree that our country's philosophy towards those laws changed to the point that we saw them as obsolete and wrong. And they were changed. And so, and for me, the Dobbs decision is not a decision about women's rights. It's a decision about states' rights. And we've been losing states' rights ever since we changed back in the 17th Amendment to the direct election of U.S. senators. And the U.S. Senate was established by our forefathers to be the body in the federal government that protected the states.
That's why we have an electoral
college. So when we went to direct election of those senators, we have over the last 100 years, we've had generation after generation see states' rights as less and less important. And the Dobbs decision is a step back in the right direction.
Right, right. And even Justice Ginsburg, nobody wants to bring this up, says this is not, you know, Roe versus Wade, it was not good, you know, good. This was not a good case. To put abortion rights on in terms of long term. She says it's eventually going to go down. And it stuck around longer than Ginsburg probably thought. But you bring up a good point, Jamie, in a sense. Being Latino, I have a lot of Latinos in my family who are Democrats, and they bring up, well, we can't be racist because we're not the majority. And I said, because the government says so. And I bring up your examples. My first example is again, I go, blacks were seen as property, you know, so that was law. Are you saying that's right? And then I get crickets because people use certain things or how they perceive it for their own benefit.
Should not be racist. I think we can all agree upon that. Mm-hmm. And so the government asking you on a U.S. census or any other document what your race is inherently racist. And they're using that information to create divisions among us. And our government, I have advocated since, I hate even to say this, one of the first letters to the editor, and I think I still have it in my desk drawer, it was a letter to the editor to the Daily Commercial in 1986 when I was still in high school, that government should not be able to ask race of its citizens, because that's the only way we're going to defeat racism. Because our own government is racist. By them asking a question and making decisions about race, there's no way that you can apply those things without some sort of racism. So I don't think it's going away as long as our government keeps asking those questions.
Right. The only time I sit there and advocate for it's okay to ask those questions is for marketing. Different cultures like different things. That's the only time. Now they make it even racist to do that in marketing, in certain aspects of marketing. You know, and I always go back to Billy Dee Williams and Colt 45. I mean, that to me, that was one of the greatest marketing campaigns of our lifetime. I mean, it was phenomenal. In fact, when I went out in the Navy with my three black friends, you know, the first time I went out with them, I went to one of their houses. I'm like, give me some Billy Dee, or, you know, he gave me malt 45. He goes, William, or Del Pilar, this is malt liquor, not beer. I mean, it became such an, because, you know, it was the first time I went out with them. You know, the way my skin, they were black, it was a big thing to them, you know, but we had fun with it. But my point is that's the only time I would advocate it, because different cultures have different tastes, et cetera, et cetera. All right, let's move on here briefly. Give me a comment here.
That was good.
In terms of the trust in media. Historically, trust level, 53% trust in the media in 1997. Today, it declined to 40% in 2022, or 44% in 2021, 40% in 2022. Now it's down to 34%, and there are polls that show it even lower. It has seriously eroded. Only 7% of Republicans trust the media, 35% of independents report trust. Now 68% of Democrats trust it, and in my opinion, it's because it's Democrat control. They have allied themselves. In third world countries, and I saw this firsthand in Panama, he who controls the media controls the government and controls the country. And that's what we see, I think, with a lot of these elections and the popular vote, because of that mass indoctrination of the media. Jamie, if you give me your quick thoughts on this, and then we'll go to Annette, and then I want to go to some rhetoric.
Yeah, I think that what we have to realize is that the media doesn't have a responsibility or even a legal responsibility to play both sides equally, right? So we've had, you know, back when I was taught in journalism school, it's like, oh, it was yellow journalism. Basically had a Democrat paper in a city and a Republican paper, and one of them ended up surviving, you know, and over the years. And so, we've learned, and we've all kind of just accepted, that if we want to get the truth as conservatives, that we have to go to alternative sources. And then we're seen as conspiracy theorists for trying to find the truth from somebody. We dare to find the truth from somebody that they haven't preordained as a speaker of the truth.
Correct. So, Jamie, do you think the media with the trust this low? I mean, it's so blatantly out there. I would imagine if you took a poll just based off the last month, it would be at about possibly single digits in with the independent groups. Do you think that it's backfire, that it's not going to help anything except their own base, that the media and what they're pushing out this cycle?
Well, I think that each campaign at this point has started to tell their story, and that story has baked in. And you're trying to tell a story about the other side as well. And I don't think when they're at the end trying to turn people against Donald Trump using words like Nazi, I don't think that people who even don't like Donald Trump or think that he's a jerk say, oh, that's a guy who's going to line people up and kill them, like literally. Now, I just don't think that people think that about the man.
Tell that to the two assassination attempts and those two people.
So I don't think people buy into it. And I think they see that as a desperate attempt by a desperate candidate. And so the mainstream media, like when Anderson Cooper, you know, and I don't even think that his interview was that tough hitting. I just think he held her feet to the fire when she couldn't answer the question. I mean, one of her answers was 7 minutes long, for goodness sake. I mean, in that Anderson Cooper interview. And so what other interviewer lets somebody ramble on for 7 minutes before they say, okay, like, let's get back on track here. William, you don't even let me ramble on for 7 minutes.
I was about to say, but John may disagree with you on that one. So,
can I tell you what I think is concerning? Yes. Well, what I think is concerning is because so many of us don't have any trust in the media any longer, it goes also an issue that I think is coming up because people are seeking the most factual information they can find. I think I brought this up, Jamie, and you were on the show, that I was with that group of women who then were telling me there was another website about a different constitution. Right. I think I think a lack of information, you know, abhors a vacuum. So people create, you know, when you're not getting good information and you're, there's no, maybe no information or a lack of information, you're creating, you do have a lot of people out there with a lot of interesting things to say. Some of them are very far out and very conspiratorial. And now there's like another constitution. But what I'm saying about that is these were reasonable women. There was no reason.
Yeah, yeah, people know when something, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but people know when something's wrong.
Yeah.
And when they know that something's wrong, William, like what you're pointing out here with these percentages, mm-hmm. when they know that something's wrong, they go seek the truth, right?
Right.
So to your point in that, these women aren't bad people. They're just trying to seek the truth. And so they found a trusted source who has a theory. And so they've believed this theory. And so, doesn't make them bad people, doesn't make them huge conspiracy theorists. It just makes them, hey, somebody who's out seeking the truth because they know they can't get it from the mainstream media.
Right.
Right. So,
you can get some bad actors there is what I'm saying too.
Sure.
But it is because
for
a pure intention though. I mean, to the point about human nature seeking truth. And I think that we do seek it, but that is the thing that gives me hope. People
are you're right in this sense too. It's they're looking for hope. They see such they're reaching and grasping at whatever they can and that's based off of hope. Their hope. See, to me, one person asked me, "Why do you loathe Obama?" Because he gave false hope to not only Black Americans but to all Americans. You know, he knew that hope was never going to come. He was just a politician being directed by his own masters, the donor master class. And so to me, that's the worst type of human being is the one who offers hope. Now, real quick, the final comment I'll give on the media there is I believe the Democrats think this rhetoric still works because these behemoths, these machines, whether it's a corporate or a political machine, sometimes they're slow to change. Obama was the first of the younger class to understand the power of the internet, the power of the camera, the power of being charismatic. You know, mm-hmm. when I saw the internet come, I was like, the age of old white guys who are bland and no personality is over. The age of the charismatic person, whether they're white, Black, or Latino, is going to emerge. Kamala's a throwback that they have buyer's remorse with right now because she cannot handle this new media. So let's move on to fear-mongering. Assassination rhetoric, did it ever really stop? And I want to remind the audience before we get – you know what? We'll talk about it first, but I want to show this image here. Fear-mongering rhetoric. Harris compared Trump to dictators like Hitler, claiming he possesses an existential threat to democracy. She accused Trump of being a dictator, suggesting he would abuse presidential powers, warned that he would restrict abortion rights and potentially overturn same-sex marriage. He would tear down institutions. I want to remind the audience – about this. Yeah. Oh, let me make it a little bit bigger so the audience can see it. This is from Cynical Publius. I guess that's an old Roman Publius. But it's time for my periodic reminder on the true fascists. Since the Democrat Party in 2023 promoted laws for the seizure of guns from law-abiding citizens or the denial of gun ownership. They promoted the censorship of free speech by stating we have to censor to protect you. The government control of industries, government control of the mass media. Children belong to the state, not their parents. Political dissidents are to be persecuted for crimes. See Trump the last couple of years. Political dissidents to be locked up for months and years. See J6. See the pro-lifers who have demonstrated. One just got sent to prison for 3 years. Policies to be based on preferred ideology. The control of the entertainment industry as propaganda. Accused dissidents of the very crimes that they are themselves committing, all in the name of greater good. Everything she is accusing Trump of, they have actually attempted to do or have openly talked about doing. So am I wrong or right? We'll start with Annette. Isn't she just projecting on Trump what she and Democrats have actually been doing, what your daughter is pushing? Because
weaponizing the DOJ against your political opponent, right? That's fascism.
And we're that's the IRS.
Yes, right? The IRS, even worse. 87,000 new IRS agents.
Now I'm gonna struggle to remember this quote by C.S. Lewis, who said that, the scariest person is someone who says they're doing it for your own good. But it is something is he's got a great quote about that. But like someone who's saying that the worst kind of like oppression is the worst kind of oppressors are those who are saying that they're doing it for your own good. You know, they're doing it for you. So I think that that's what he says. The worst kind of oppression.
I agree. Yeah.
No, I think they've got the fascism thing wrong. And you know what you guys would love? And I'm sorry, you guys probably missed it too. You must think all I do all day long is watch TV and not take care of my 5 children. But that's not actually true. But I don't sleep. That's the issue. I stayed up Friday night after our long thing and I watched Bill Maher's interview. That's exactly what Megyn Kelly said. She really got Bill Maher when she was talking about that the Democrats are really the fascists. She just nailed it. He just sat there and didn't even know what to say. He had no response, which is very unusual for him because he's a very bright guy. He's like, well, I don't know what to say. You know what he said? He ended it with, I think history is going to prove you wrong. But I think history is going to prove her right.
Oh, right. Megyn Kelly is an outlier. She is when society talks about strong women.
Yes.
That's Megyn Kelly. She does. Excuse my friend. She takes no shit from nobody. And the problem with Bill Maher is he's in a bubble. And even though the conservatives on his show, they don't really push back. She's like, And then she gets in their face with the facts. You should have seen Bill Maher when he was pimping his book and he tried this crap on her show. And he just looked down. We'll agree to disagree because he had no comeback. You know, I read a few articles this weekend. Jamie, your thoughts on the fact?
I think there's a couple things. I really think that the air is coming out of the balloon for Kamala Harris. But then I also was on a show this weekend, and it was a very good show, a very thoughtful show. And I was asked, you know, what if you're wrong? If you're wrong, why are you wrong? And I think if I'm wrong, it's because I missed, you know, kind of the meme campaigns that are geared towards young people. And, you know, it's prevalent. If you speak to anybody under the age of 30 about politics, you better have a handful of memes that you know. And because that's what they're making their decision on is not any type of what we would call deep thinking or anything. It's just like, oh, well, that's the meme. So when I start talking about, you know, which campaign is telling their story the best? You know, the Harris campaign is telling the story that Trump is evil, and the Trump folks are telling the story that Kamala Harris is unqualified. And, you know, I've always said that, you know, the jerk beats the idiot every single time, every single election. If you can have say, hey, in this election, who's the jerk? And somebody pulls through the roof and the other person pulls as an idiot, I can promise you the jerk
coasting
is going to
win.
I'm sorry. I just meant to prep that, Jamie. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
No. And so, you know, we have a vice president, a vice presidential candidate in Tim Walz that was picked because he basically came up with this one word weird that they tried to shove down our throats about Donald Trump and all of us and nobody accepted it. And he became the vice presidential nominee because, and by the way, he's the weirdest vice presidential nominee that we've had. I mean, I don't even know since when. Like, he is a weird dude. He comes on stage and kicks and whoops. And, you know, he and his wife, you know, had to resign as teachers. He and his wife took a single student to a Indigo Girls concert. I mean, these are things that were unacceptable even in the 90s. And
no, Jamie, you're right. But I would disagree in this. I think Biden was picked for the establishment, but Obama was much smarter. Kamala was picked because she was dumber than Biden, even in Biden's current state. And Walz was picked because he was dumber than Kamala. I think there is a little bit of truth to that. I mean, that or just dumb sense. I want to show this on the rhetoric. And Annette, not that I don't want Jamie's comment, and I want your comment because some of the things she says here, I want to hear from a woman's perspective. I think she's talking to a larger audience, but I think she wants to reach out to women with this rhetoric.
his cozying up to dictators, his obsession with Hitler that has now come out, what he has said about our veterans, and what he wants to do with the military against his political adversaries. It's all huge news. This is the future that we're looking at in the next Trump term, if there is one. But this is what voters know right now, that he is killing us. I'm talking about us women. He's killing us. He is putting us at risk. He is making us afraid to have babies. He is putting our reproductive health at risk. And some women have died already because of this. So we can see right now what's coming. These headlines, and very good reporting, by the way, that shouldn't be questioned by idiots about what Trump has said about Hitler. That's incredibly important to know. But I do understand that people who are busy and that are people who are just tapping in may not be able to comprehend, because we've been free. We've been comfortable. We cannot comprehend that. And I understand that. I validate that it is hard to go from here to there. It is where we're going. I hope we don't find out the hard way. But what's happening with women right now is real, and it is playing out across America.
Okay, so I was wrong. She was definitely talking to women there. Now, here's 2 points. She tried to play the, role there showing the emotion. The only thing that was missing were the actual tears, because you could hear her voice wanting to tremble. She just couldn't pull it off. Two, it's all complete lies. Three, she said it in a way like, don't you dare question me. That's where I wish Megyn Kelly was on that panel, you know, or if I was on that panel. Because certain people will question it, most people won't. That was nothing but hate, rhetoric, fear-mongering. And again, going to your daughter, since you brought her up, that's what I think your daughter hears, and that's what I think scares your daughter. And I think it's not just your daughter. I think it's a lot of women. And that's why Republicans get a bad name, but on the flip side, Republicans are their own worst enemies at times when it comes to talking about abortion. Again, so I really want to hear from a woman's perspective. When you hear that, you're a humanist. You see both the good and wrong. So when you see that, Annette, what do you think?
Mika seems completely unhinged to me in that segment, in that little dissertation that she gave, doesn't she? She seems very desperate now. Obviously, they think that Trump is going to win, which makes me really happy, because she wouldn't be talking that way. I mean, she is really trying to drive the point home that you need to be scared right now, scared to have a baby, scared. First of all, the people that I know where I grew up on the south side of Chicago, which is not the ivory tower that Mika Brzezinski is living in, they're all Trump loving, just so you know. Like, the working class people that I know from the south side of Chicago love Trump, and they are not scared that they won't be able to have a baby, or that all that stuff that she is trying to poison the minds of people who might be a little bit concerned about that issue. That was a bunch of fabrication and lies. And everyone knows that what he said about the military, what they're saying he said about the military, is absolutely not true. Just like that article in The Atlantic that you just
We're going to get to that. We're going to get to that.
I'm sorry. But I mean,
and real quick on the military, I served. 90% of the military, 95% of the military supports Trump. So I agree with you. She's unhinged. Okay. Jamie, real quick then, from a strategist.
I would just say that every single one of these pro-choice women who have this extreme divisive rhetoric support men playing in women's sports.
Exactly. They're their own worst enemy in destroying womanhood. Great point.
That's it.
Great point.
And we have a vice president who has said she supports our tax dollars going to, quote, gender-affirming care, which I don't even know what that means. Why don't we just call it sex change, right? So it's not gender-affirming care. It's a sex change. And so she wants to support our tax dollars going towards prisoners having sex changes. And these are the same women who support that. And so I have a hard time taking anyone seriously who acts that divisive on one single issue when they're so hypocritical about protecting women in sports and protecting women who are in prison.
I get that, Jamie, and I agree with you 100%, but that's so our problem. That's how we look at it. Whereas there's millions of women who they're like scared to death. So we better come up with some kind of plan. And I think J.D. Vance started it at that debate in terms of how to communicate, how to sit there and be compassionate and get the truth out of there. But I was like, because it's the power of marketing with words. And that's why I loathe the AP and the government needs to start jumping on the AP. It's like illegal aliens. That's a technically legal term that's used by the government. They had a whole propaganda campaign as to why they changed it. And I noticed this when I started my first startup in sports. I was with the AP style of writing. And then as I got politically more involved, I noticed the transition of words and how they were leading the campaign to change the meanings of these words. And it's very powerful and it works. So we as conservatives have to understand that. That's why I have another podcast called The Red, White, and Rude that talks about pop culture and politics, because all politics, as Andrew Breitbart famously said, is downstream. God bless that man. I miss him today. Anyway, I want to show this other video on examples of the fake news and how they help the progressive side, the liberals, the Democrats, and minimizing how bad things can be. And this is a classic already. That's only a couple weeks old.
The incidents were limited to a handful of apartment complexes, and the mayor said our dedicated police officers have acted on those concerns.
Okay, the key word there, it's been only limited to a handful of apartment complexes.
Full of problems.
Only, Martha, do you hear yourself? Only a handful of apartment complexes in America were taken over by Venezuelan gangs, and Donald Trump is the problem and not Kamala Harris's open border. Americans are so fed up with what's going on, and they have every right to be. And I really find this exchange, Martha, sort of interesting, because you seem to be more focused with nitpicking everything that Donald Trump has said rather than acknowledging that apartment complexes in the United States of America are being taken over by violent gangs. I worry so much more about that problem than anything else here. We've got to get American communities in a safe space again.
Okay, over a few seconds of that. But the point is, she was like minimizing the fact that people have been beaten. There's video of people getting beaten. There's videos of these guys breaking down breaking the locks, getting in there. Think about it, America. They've taken over an apartment complex and more than one. And she said, it's only a handful. Well, Martha, let me go to your apartment complex with a bunch of my essays and we take over and see how you like that. So that's just one example. And I'm already going off on a tangent. So before we get to that, because I do want your comments, but I've been dying to show that video. You know? But I also want to go to what Annette mentioned. The Jeffrey Goldberg article that was in the Atlantic, where Jeffrey Goldberg was like, he had anonymous sources telling him how Trump said, well, let me show you the tweets here in terms of.
About paying for the funeral for the girl.
Right. So Trump volunteered to pay for the funeral of a murdered soldier. But when the bill came, he became angry. It doesn't cost $60,000 to bury a fucking Mexican. He turned to his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, and issued an order. Don't pay it. Now, they all jumped on the bandwagon. My favorite Cubana, Reginita Navarro. I won't tell you what Reginita means. It's a term of endearment. But Trump became angry, and she quotes it. She is the worst Latina ever because she came from a family of elite prestige, and she's jumped on the elitist stage here using her Latino background. See, us Latinos, here's why we don't like him. She jumped on the bandwagon. And then Mark Meadows, who was there, comes out and says, you know what? I need to make this bigger for the audience. My apologies. I was in the discussions featured in the Atlantic's latest hit piece against President Trump. And that says, he goes on to say, that never happened. So I'm not done yet. The person involved here, the sister of the poor soldier that died, her sister, Myra Guillon, came out and said, can you guys see that? I think you can.
Yeah.
I don't appreciate how you are. This is Myra Guillen, the sister of the dead soldier, pushing back, not pushing back, but telling the Atlantic they're dead wrong. Wow. I don't appreciate how you are exploiting my sister's death for politics. Hurtful and disrespectful to the important changes she made for service members. President Donald Trump did nothing but show respect to my family and Vanessa. In fact, I voted for President Trump today. And she's responding to the quote that the Atlantic used that said, I need the kind of generals that Hitler had. Trump's obsession with dictators and disdain for America's military are deepening, Jeffrey Goldberg reports. This goes back to what the MSNBC host was saying in reference to Hitler. Then she had the last, I don't want to say she had the last laugh, but she took another dig here and said, let me minimize this one a little bit. Thank you, Donald Trump, for meeting with my mother and I today and taking the time to speak with us privately. See you at the White House. So what did Jeffrey Goldberg do? He doubled down. And before I get your comments, the final issue is his sources were all anonymous. He refused to sit there and source them. And I will tell you this. I'm very familiar with anonymous sources. Again, my previous startup, I had a lot of agents in the sports world. William, you can't use my name. Or reporters, you can't use my name. But here's what went down. And we reported. In 2015, the New York Times began abusing that trusted way of reporting to start naming anonymous, to start saying anonymous sources for stories that never happened, such as the Russia hoax. They started to use anonymous sources simply to put a lie out there, and they covered their ass. Oh, it's anonymous sources, we can't say it, but it's true, trust us. That's what Goldberg is trying to do here. You know, so the discussion point is 2016, these anonymous sources have come out with fake news lies to give validity that of truth to what is actually untruth. First of all, feel free to comment on what you want. I said my piece, final topic here. Feel free to comment, have whatever you like. And then you brought this up earlier, so we'll start with you on this. What are your thoughts on this, whatever angle you want to take?
I was, when I saw this, I was so outraged at the blatant manipulation, and I was so happy that she said, that lady who, the sister said, in fact, I voted for Trump today, and that Mark Meadows came out with the comment that he made, that they basically, in my opinion, but I guess the thing is that it's this article that shows to me that's more out of Hitler's playbook than anything Trump has ever done. That was exactly the state of the time right before, you know, in the 30s with Hitler. That was the kind of stuff that they actually did. That's where I'm like, it's the opposite. What they're saying about Trump, that's who they are. You know, would that be posters? I don't even know how to say it, but that's what, like, doesn't everybody see it? But I think that there is something, and I guess that's part of marketing, or maybe right out of the playbook of Goebbels. I don't know. They keep on putting Trump and Hitler together, putting Trump and Hitler together, and putting them together again and again and again. And it's for some people that is working, you know, by saying it again and again and again.
That's a marketing tactic. The more you say something, eventually the more believable, because I used it all the time, but I use it with what I call the righteous truth. Yeah. You keep saying something over and over, and they will believe it. The problem is when it's the truth, it's a great marketing tactic. When it's a lie, it can be devastating in terms of what we're seeing happen today. Final words.
I just need to ask you, how does someone combat that? How do they?
Well, let's go to Jamie on that. Mr. Jamie, whatever comment you want to make on this. Real quick, this is their October surprise. It's pretty much what I thought was their October surprise. And is this the first time you've seen October surprise kind of fall flat? I just want to add that question as a GOP operative.
No, here's the thing. We may not know that it is falling flat because it's clear that the Democratic Party and this administration has turned their back on Israel and the Jewish people. And there's no denying that. And it has showed up in the polls, and Kamala Harris's people are reading those. And now they're Hail Mary to try to scare some Jewish people into voting for a party that no longer aligns themselves with Israel and the Jewish people, is to call their opponent Hitler. And that is the only demographic that attack is geared towards, because I don't want to say nobody else cares about Hitler, but it's not in, let's say, an African American's DNA to like, oh, Hitler, they weren't raised on Hitler being bad. Jewish people were, and yeah. And they're taught that. And in fact, one of my very first college classes, as you know, I went back to college when I was probably 24, 25, married with two children. And I went to class on a Saturday morning from 7 to 10 a.m., and it was a class called Social Problems. There were about six of us in there, and it was kind of interesting because there was me. I was a young guy working a blue-collar job, married with kids. There was a retired Jewish guy, an African-American girl, and like two others in the class. There were like six of us. So we had this great class, and I learned something from that Jewish retiree, and he said something along the lines of, you know why we are taught as a people to do things that takes thinking, back in the day it was mathematical skills. So we were bankers, we were whatever. He's like, because we've been run off of every piece of dirt we ever tried to own. Mm-hmm. And right. It stuck with me all these years that he goes, the only thing that you have is what you can throw in a pillowcase and carry in your brain. And you have to be willing to take those things and start completely over. And he goes, that's what we were taught. And generations of us have been taught that. And it was really kind of a profound moment an enlightening moment for me I wish I knew the man's name, and I wish he was still alive so I could thank him for that moment, because it's followed me for a very long time. And that part of that is Hitler. And so when he said, when they say Hitler, it's geared towards one group of people, and it's because they're losing that demographic, and they don't know, Kamala Harris does not know how to gain those votes by being positive and inclusive. She only knows gain those votes by being divisive and hateful.
Yeah, what's terrible is hate goes much farther than being nice. It's terrible.
I don't know that I agree with that.
Jamie, you don't have to disagree. The data out there says
no. I think it's one of those ugly truths. I think in Kamala Harris's in her campaign, she had the opportunity, and she was riding so high coming out of the announcement that she was going to be the presidential nominee for Democrats. Go back to that excitement phase. If she had been able to do anything positive and unifying for our country during the first 3 or 4 weeks of this campaign, she probably would not be anywhere near in the dire straits she's in now today, and would be marching towards an electoral landslide. But the truth of the matter is, she doesn't have a clue of how to unite our country or what she would do. I question whether she understands a voter in Omaha, Nebraska, or Sarasota, Florida. I have no doubt that she's fully aware of what the swamp in Washington, D.C., Manhattan, and San Francisco want her to do. But there's no doubt in my mind that if you get outside of Detroit, Michigan, she has no idea what Americans think or how they want to unite.
There's a great video of Tucker Carlson talking to Harmeet Dillion. I've met Harmeet in person. It's funny with the camera. She is so small, diminutive. I've actually never talked to her. I've met her three times because people want to talk to her, and I have no shame at the convention. Come on, I'll introduce you to her. So I think she knows how I look, but I've never said two words. Hey, Ms. Dillion, here's somebody who wants to meet you. In fact, that's what I did with G. But my point is, she, I encourage you to watch it. It's talks about Kamala's history coming up, and I knew this already. And the reason I would I don't disagree. What I would tell you, Jamie, is it's not in her DNA. Her whole life, her whole career has been about backstabbing, about lying, about using her womanly wares to move ahead. That's been her whole, and Harmeet confirms this. It's not in her DNA. That never could her. And to defend her, That's not in the Democrat Party DNA. Obama did it briefly against McCain, but even towards the end of the McCain run, he started to go negative. And once he got into office, he went completely negative. It's not in their DNA anymore because the emotion of hate is so much easier to manipulate and to put somebody against another person. It's a class. That's why we have so many dictators. They do that so well. And, you know, you brought up a good point that made me realize this Hitler talk, I mean, they are so deep in the hole right now with Jews, with the Jewish vote, because of what they've done, that I hadn't even considered that. But all this Hitler rhetoric could be a subliminal, a way they're trying to get the Jewish vote back subliminally. Yeah, he is Hitler. Oh,
I don't think it's subliminal.
Oh, yeah. No, what I mean, though, is...
It's full out.
That's true.
Can I ask a quick question, though, you guys, before I know we're going to wrap it up? But is it me, or remember, William, a long time ago, G said that he felt Kamala didn't really have the support she needed from her party. I feel like they're letting her hang out to dry right now a little bit. Is that just me that feels that way?
No. This is what happens in every election. Once they see the tea, what's it saying? The leaves in the tea or whatever.
The leaves.
Yes, they're like rats. They're abandoning ships, you know, because they don't want to be attached to that. They see it. And and Jim, I'll give you the last word and we'll close the show out. But my personal opinion regarding Kamala, this is her one shot. She's not likable. She's a terrible candidate. She has no personality. She's everything negative, but she's a mean girl who knows how to put that foot on that neck and twist it like Bruce Lee would and take her opponent out. And that's how she got the nomination of presidency here. But if she doesn't win it, she's done politically. I think she has nowhere else to go. She's gone as high as she can. I could be wrong, but I don't see it. And I think they're seeing there's not enough mail-in ballots here to switch this election. And they are like rats on the ship starting to abandon. Now, in their defense, they're also becoming angry because they see this happening. And that's why you got Brzezinski
with that tirade.
Mika, yeah. And Jamie, you get the final word here, and then we'll get
to that. I don't know that you have a whole lot of Democrats in your audience, but to those Democrats who are in the audience, I ask, if Kamala Harris is unsuccessful winning this election, is she the leader of your party on February 1st of next year? I don't think there's a single person who is a Democrat who thinks that Kamala Harris, should she lose, is the leader of their party on February 1st. And
exactly.
If your answer to that is not yes, then how can you vote for her for president?
I agree. That's a good way. You're right. And she's actually older too. She's 61. So there's young guns up there, like Gavin Newsom, which is who G keeps pushing. And I agree with G. So to the audience, thank you for listening. We had a lot of fun with this episode. Real quick, Miss Annette, I want you to pimp your book here. Pimp your book here.
I did a political book. Yeah, there it is, Where Fairy Tales Go, Love Story. Something that's not in
prices. We all need a little bit of love in our life. And so pick up Annette's book, Where Fairy Tales Go, A Love Story. Annette's a regular on here. We always take her for granted. We always don't pimp her anymore. I don't know why I'm using the term pimp today, but yeah, I'm thinking, come on, that's why.
Thank you for the plug.
There you go. And Mr. Jamie, tell us a little bit about where they can find you in your book again.
You can find me at Rep Jam. I'm on Amazon with American Speeches That Changed History, and I'm on Substack at Reasonable Arguments. Thank you for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. And to the audience, do not forget that you can find this podcast and others like it at grumblingsmedia.com. Make sure you like, share, and most importantly, subscribe. And you can also check this podcast and others like it on our social media platforms, YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Pandora, and Spotify. You know, I need to write that down because I'm always actually thinking, okay, what are they? Anyway, to the audience, I am William Del Pilar. This is Fired Up. And for Annette and Jamie, until next time, I bid you adieu.